The Urban Astronomer Podcast. Welcome to the Urban Astronomer Podcast, episode 10. That's a milestone, you know, and it's really quite awkward that this particular episode should have been delayed by a whole week, but, well, I was sick. Enough that I was booked off of work for a few days, and for almost a week I was walking around with a voice that it sounded like a bucket of gravel being poured out, and, well, I wasn't going to record under those conditions. But I'm mostly better now, so, well, here we are. A few days before falling ill, I interviewed one of the engineers who worked on SALT, the South African Large Telescope, a 10-meter instrument that dominates the landscape at the South African Astronomical Observatory's facility in Sutherland. SALT uses a segmented mirror design that requires constant calibration to keep the optics all working together. As the temperature changes during the evening, the mechanical structures holding all the parts in place, all the optical components in place, they expand or contract, so the mirrors need to be shifted very precisely to keep the telescope in focus. Dion worked on the software that controls the system and explained a bit about how it all works, how he landed the job, and what it's like working on big telescopes like that. So you worked on SALT as a software engineer, right?
That's correct, yeah.
What background did you have to end up working on big telescopes?
Well, I don't know if you're aware that SALT is a LabVIEW telescope.
Meaning?
Do you know what LabVIEW is?
I don't know what that means. Sorry, no.
Oh, okay. It's a graphical programming language. In other words, we don't program in C++ or Python or any of these other languages. We use LabVIEW.
Okay.
And my background is I did a diploma in electrical engineering, and I basically did apprenticeship at Plessy in Cape Town, and basically ended up as a test engineer developing test systems. And then when I moved to England, I learned this. I could never program in text-based programming languages. I just don't have an aptitude for it.
Right.
I learned LabVIEW. It's used a lot in test and measurement. It's an American company called National Instruments. So there was a precedent set, the SOAR telescope in Chile, which is a North American-owned and Chile-owned telescope. They used LabVIEW. So I recently moved back to South Africa, and there was an advert in the paper for a LabVIEW engineer to work on the telescope. And that's how I got onto SALT, because there were no LabVIEW engineers in South Africa at that time.
Okay. Besides that, I mean, do you have any interest in astronomy or space science in general?
Well, I've always been interested in space science, but I had and have no education or qualifications in astronomy. And in fact, I don't know a hell of a lot about astronomy, despite spending 15 years on the telescope. I mean, I'm very much a hardware engineer, so I write software to talk to hardware, and I sort of just concentrated on that. I mean, obviously, I've learned some things from the astronomers that I've worked with.
Okay.
But, yeah, my background is definitely not astronomy.
All right. I see one of your projects, I think the most recent one, you wrote code controlling the mirror segment's edge sensor.
That's right.
What is that? And is that okay. Is there anything to do with collimation like we used to with our amateur instruments, or is it more involved?
No. So SALT is a segmented mirror, 91 segments. And I was involved in fact, I was the primary mirror software engineer, because the telescope is divided up into two systems. One is the primary mirror system, and the other is the telescope control system.
Right.
So the telescope control system does the pointing, rotates the dome, rotates the structure, controls all the instrumentation, and various other stuff. And the primary mirror is not really, well, it is involved in astronomy, but it's not involved in the the daily or the nightly activity of astronomy. You have to, we have a tower outside, and we point the mirrors at this tower, and we have a laser beam that bounces off the segments, and there's three actuators on the segments, and the segments have to be aligned. The big problem thereafter is you've got to redo the mirror alignment two or three times a night as the temperature changes. Right. So we had an edge sensor system to maintain the alignment, but the first edge sensor system was capacitive sensors from a company called Fugal in France, and they failed quite badly. The whole project was scrapped. And Fugal came up with a new sensor, which was much more extensively tested, an inductive sensor. And in fact, ESO have now adopted that sensor for their ELT in Chile. And we were, ESO funded part of the research for that. So they developed the sensor. And at that point, this was in 2010, I was asked to write the software for it. And I started at scratch and wrote the software for that edge sensor. It was quite a major project, and it was the final sort of nail in the coffin to finish the telescope off. Mm-hmm. We achieved that in July last year.
I remember I've heard quite a few talks and chatted to some of the guys like Willy Kurtz and some of the, well, whom I've spoken to, and then I've seen and heard talks from some of the other like obstacle engineers. Apparently that telescope was plagued with a lot of problems. Is that normal with a, well, I suppose any big engineering project you've got problems, but you know, I mean, as telescopes go, is it normal to have so many teething issues?
Well, the only experience of another telescope I have is the HET in Texas, which is the Hobby Emily telescope. You probably know that SALT is based on that. That was one of the first big segmented telescopes. And in fact, our technical operations manager from about 2005 to 2007 is now the tech ops manager at HET. And they had very similar problems. They had different problems which we learned from and managed to avoid. But yeah, we did have a lot of problems. The major problem was mirror alignment and maintaining mirror alignment. These sensors measure in nanometers. We move the mirrors in nanometers, and you know, a 3 degree temperature change over an hour, and your mirror segments are pointing all over the place. So your image is completely diffused, and it's just a big large blob, really.
Yes. So,
yeah, and we had a lot of electromechanical problems. Under-spec components, which had to be replaced. The biggest problem, in fact, you're probably referring to, is we had an optical problem. And that took 2 to 3 years to solve. And it turned out to be...
It was a flexure, wasn't it? In the housing for the final optics, wasn't it?
Not a flexure. It was a it was two disparate materials that expanded and contracted at different rates, and it was sort of a design fault. But nobody, we hadn't built that part of the system. That was built, I think, by Sagem in France, another French company. And so, Dr. Dara Donahue, I don't know if you've heard of him.
Name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he died recently. He was the lead astronomer on that. Well, he was the lead engineer on that investigation, because he moved from astronomy to engineering and became, he moved from the SAO to SALT and came and worked for us. And he led that, and it took a long time to discover exactly what the problem was and to fix it. So that was one of the major problems. But we had a lot of other teething problems, and every now and again a lot of the systems will fail simultaneously, and we can lose quite a bit of observation. But generally nowadays, I was up there for 8 nights, arriving back in Cape Town on the Wednesday last week. Okay. And out of out of seven nights, we had six absolutely clear nights, and the one night that was bombed out was due to humidity.
Well, all right, let's see. Bit of a different subject. I actually just thought of this Nana. I was just going over your LinkedIn profile just to get an idea of what I should ask you. The word term software engineer gets thrown around a lot. I mean, I work in an environment, it's my day job, where there's an awful lot of software engineers, but they're not engineers, they're programmers. But it seems like what you're doing is real engineering.
Yes, we've had this, you know, there's about, currently there are four software engineers in Cape Town and one on site. So in total, while I was there, there were six of us. And we've had the discussion a few times. I mean, I find it difficult to call someone who does web design and does, you know, proper programming, HTML and all that, a software engineer. For me, a software engineer is someone who not only designs and develops the software, but is actually integrating it with hardware. But that's my personal view. Mm-hmm. We've had arguments about this. I mean, the guy who did the pointing model used to say he writes software. The minute the ones and noughts leave the computer, he's not interested after that. So whatever it's connected to, he has no interest in that.
Yeah, it's just a black box to him.
Yes. But I mean, he was a BSc computer scientist. Most of the guys there are BSc computer scientists. Or they have electronic backgrounds. So I would have called him a software engineer because I saw some of the work he did and worked with him on it as well. Mm-hmm. It's just a different one.
Compared to projects that you've worked on over the years, throughout your career, would you say there's anything uniquely challenging about big telescopes, issues that you wouldn't come across in other environments?
Well, so I was in test software. If your software has bugs, you can live with them because you're testing some electronic thing, and the most important thing is whether that electronic device passes your test. On the telescope, your software really has to work.
Right.
It can't crash, and you must remember it's LabVIEW, which is a graphics intense software, so you need powerful computers. We also use Windows. Some of our systems run on Linux. I did the SaltiCam, which is the salt imaging camera. It was the first light instrument. Mm-hmm. I did that on Linux. But LabVIEW ports across any from Sun to Linux. You can develop on a Windows machine and open it up on Linux or a Mac for that matter.
Right.
So the telescope, yeah, it did. It was much more structured software. I mean, I had to learn a hell of a lot from my colleagues, especially the guys with BSc computer science, because I've never studied software. So yeah, but in terms of work, it's almost impossible now for me to go back to any other job. It's just everything else is just too mundane.
Right.
I'm really struggling to find work. I got offered a job in a big test house that only does LabVIEW, only uses National Instruments hardware, and I turned it down. Just can't do it anymore.
I suppose this is not the same.
No. I mean, it's unique. Once you've worked on a telescope, I mean, if you ask anybody there, you can go speak to anyone. They never, ever want to do any other job again.
I think I can understand that, although maybe I'd be coming from a different angle. Okay, well, last thing, what else, aside from the mirror segments, and SaltiCam you just mentioned, was there anything else you were involved in on Salt?
Okay, one of the early pieces, so the edge sensors, I did the actuators, which is called SPS, the segment, we've got lots of acronyms, so The edge sensors are called SAMs, the Segment Alignment Maintenance System. Then you've got the actuators to move the segments. That's the segment positioning system. Then you've got the overall control system for that, which is MAX, which is the mirror alignment control system. So I worked on all, I wrote all that software. But one of the other big projects I did was we needed a to log every single event that happened between subsystems or initiated by any subsystem. Right. So I did what was called the ELS, the event logging system, which comprised three parts. One was a data engine that just monitored all the data socket connections, and every time there's a change, it generates the data change event, and then that's written to a MySQL database. And then we had another section to that, which was the which was like a monitoring interface for the astronomers and the SALT operator, because we have two people operating the telescope. A dedicated SALT operator actually does the mirror alignment if it's required, points the telescope, in fact, controls most things on the telescope. And then the SALT astronomer, who's there to cue schedule the targets for the night. And so they need quite a bit of information. So this monitoring app shows them the structure, an image of the structure rotating. It shows the RAM deck, shows the temperatures, the dew points, gives alarms for when you've got to close the telescope and the humidity goes above, no, I can't actually remember. I know wind is above 60 kilometers an hour. You've got to shut the dome and point the dome shutter away from the direction of the wind. There's various stuff that goes on. So that this, and then the other part of the ELS was a data viewer, which is a troubleshooting tool. So you can either go into the database, extract like temperatures from the night before or events to find out what led up to a failure. And you can also monitor in real time. If you want to monitor a specific event, the data viewer could graph it or chart it for you. So that was quite a major piece of software that I did as well.
Okay. Now I know from experience in my day job that's the sort of thing that feels quite mundane when you're designing it, but yeah. It ends up being a very large job and quite critical to the success of the project as a whole.
Yeah. No, we had a very good systems engineer, Gerard Swart. Do you know that the whole SALT project team went on and did that electric car in the end? You're aware of that?
The Joule, yes.
Or attempted to do the electric car, the Joule.
I didn't realize it.
Yeah. Yeah. So shortly after 2005, they all left after the launch of the telescope. And I think that was possibly one of the reasons that caused quite a bit of problems, because all the new staff didn't get a proper handover at that point.
There's no such thing as a proper handover in my experience.
No, I know.
Well, normally at this point I ask if people want to get a hold of you, how they could do that, perhaps on Twitter or social media, if we have a blog or a website.
I think email account is better. If anybody wanted to get hold of me, yeah. Because that the SALT report that I do, that's, you know, my own private Twitter. I actually started that account to try and understand what the hell Twitter was all about. And I sort of developed from there. But now there isn't an official, I must tell you, it's called @SALT_Astro. That is the official SALT Twitter account.
Okay, I'll put that on the show notes so people know to not to confuse you. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's probably better. Yes.
All right. Well, then I've got nothing else to ask you. I suppose. Thank you very much. It's been great chatting to you.
Okay, Alan. No problem. Thanks very much.
If you're part of the South African astronomical community, you probably know all about SCOPEX. It's an astronomy and telescope expo which happens every year at the Military History Museum in Johannesburg and has done so for over a decade. One of our first guests on the podcast, Chris Stewart, is one of Scopex's organizers. And if you listened to that episode, you would have heard us chatting about his history and how it all works and so on. Well, a few weeks ago, they announced that this year's Scopex will be held on the 16th of September. The lineup of speakers and guests is still up in the air, so I can't tell you who you'll be able to see, but all the usual attractions are going to be happening. Amateur telescope making demonstrations, all of the regional astronomy clubs will be running stands there, there'll be astrophotography and telescope making competitions, raffles, lucky draws, and so on and so on and so on. And of course, the star party at the end of the evening. I haven't missed it in years, and in fact, I usually run the astrophotography table, but this year will be different. Instead of my official ASA director's hat, I'll be wearing the podcaster hat. I'll be recording the open lectures and interviewing guests and exhibitors, and you'll be able to listen to all of this here on the show. Not that it's any substitute for actually being there, of course, but if you can't make it, or if you're one of our many overseas listeners, then at least you won't have to miss out completely. So those details. Scopex is happening on 16 September at the Museum of Military History in Sachsenwald, Johannesburg, South Africa. Admission is 40 Rand for adults, 30 Rand for students and school learners, and 20 Rand for senior citizens. Gates open at 9. The star party begins when the sun goes down. So, that's another episode in the can, which is a term I believe they use in the film industry and so not entirely appropriate here, but you know what I'm trying to say. As usual, we really appreciate your comments and feedback and really look forward to hearing from every one of you. Your encouragement, your offers of money, your criticisms, it all helps shape the future of the direction of the show, so please keep it coming. All the cool kids are doing it, why aren't you? You can find the show notes for this episode at www.urban-astronomer.com. And that's a great place to leave your comments, but if you'd prefer something a little more personal, you can visit the Facebook page at facebook.com/urbanastronomer, it's all one word, or you can just tweet me at uastronomer. We'll be back to our normal schedule next week with another interview. The guest will be Martin Hagen. Martin is a professional graphic designer and animator. He works in film and TV. But he is also an experienced photographer and got into astrophotography only a few short years ago and is already producing some astonishing deep sky images. I was very happy to get him to appear on the show. Tune in next week, you can hear what he has to say. Cheerio.